Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Friday morning out there, Western and Northwestern Oklahoma. Welcome to Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. All kinds of stuff to talk about. About 5 o'clock yesterday, 4:30 or so, the SEC presidents, chancellors, voted unanimously for Oklahoma and Texas to be involved in that conference, accepting their applications. So what better day than to bury the Big 12? Can we do that?
I think the grave has been dug.
Can we bury the Big 12?
Sure we can.
Let's talk about the Big 12 in a almost a funeral setting. I don't think we're going to give the eulogy, but I want to
talk. Because that means it's sad. I'm not sad about this. Do we celebrate the life of the Big 12?
That's what we're doing. This is a celebration of life for the Big 12 at the end of the show.
Tell some funny stories.
Great games, yeah. Best players, best games,
coaches,
that kind of stuff.
Maybe the best coaches.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't put that on the list, but that'd be fine too. Just kind of talk about the good times. What's that song?
Let the good times
roll.
No,
not that one.
I don't know.
Talking about the good times, drinking down the bad.
I love that saying. I don't know what it is.
I feel like that's a Backroads song.
It probably
maybe
is.
Maybe a Casey Donahue song, actually.
Maybe. You're in there hearing the...
I get to hear it a lot.
You get to hear it a lot.
So we won't put the dirt all the way on top of the Big 12 grave, but we're going to get pretty darn close. That'll be at the end of the show. Rian Gibson, professional golfer, coming out to the 24th annual KECO Moran Equipment Open. We're gonna call him and just kind of visit with him. Folds of Honor. They've got a golf cart raffle going on that we've shared the QR code to the Skinny on Sports Facebook page. Get involved. That golf cart is awesome. I mean awesome.
It's easy. Yeah, go to that Facebook page.
Go to the Facebook page. I mean, it takes it right to the front page of the Folds in Honor. I'm just getting texts. Jared does not need to break into song. Ouch. It's pretty early on a Friday to get
that. You think that hurts my feelings? That's not the first time I've heard that.
Pretty early on a Friday to get that kind of blast.
Wow.
Anyhow, we'll talk about Folds of Honor. We'll talk to Rian Gibson.
I'm going to need that person's number so I can call and just sing into their voicemail.
It's actually my wife, so probably not.
Oh, okay.
Boom.
Well, good. I already have her number. Boom.
There you are. By the way, do you realize... with Rian, he holds the record for the lowest round of golf ever.
I do realize that because you told me that.
16 under 55 on
that
his own ball.
That is just mind-boggling.
I mean, honestly, we're going to have
some... How many Eagles were involved in that?
Well, we'll have to ask him. We're going to have some really good four-man golf teams this weekend out here. And there's going to be a few of them that don't shoot 16 under on their own ball, on the four-man scramble, much less their own ball, which is just fascinating to me. I actually know a guy that's in the group that same day.
Wow.
Who played at Southwestern.
Cool. Very cool.
Unfortunately, the U.S. women's soccer team won in penalty kicks. Speaking of bury them, I was ready to put all kinds of dirt on their grave. Can't do it.
Are we really going to talk about that?
Well, if they lost, we were. And, of course, the draft last night, NBA draft, Oklahoma City. Anybody know who they drafted? Do we know those names?
Were you giddy about it?
I mean, I had the joke teed up, too, but I didn't want to say it. And since no one really knows, I mean, let's be honest, no one knows. The NBA draft is so much more hit or miss than even the NFL draft is. Probably the biggest news to me in the NBA last night was Russell Westbrook.
Yes.
To the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yes.
And all the possibilities that entails for next season, moving forward, legacies, maybe our show at one point after a championship run. It's fascinating to me to think about all that that is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in. 225-9698. There's part of me, Jared, looking at the Texas State Open. It got finished with the third round, I believe. So maybe the Tony Romo dream is officially dead.
I think so.
I think it may be dead.
It's okay. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. We move the date. Maybe we can get off of that Texas State Open thing.
Maybe, yeah, we need to figure out what works for his schedule.
I hate to put you on the spot here, but I don't know the answer to this question.
Well, what do you think I do?
I was asked this question last night. So tonight, if you don't know much about what we do here with the golf tournament, the KECO golf tournament, tonight is the horse race.
Right.
Which normally there's like 14 guys tee off here, they all tee off on number one, they go down, play number one, a certain amount get eliminated all the way through until you get down to number nine, there's two guys, and then we'll see who wins.
Right.
Tonight, there's going to be 10 guys teeing off of 10 and 10 guys teeing off of number 5.
10 and 5, okay.
10 and 5.
Gotcha.
Which we won't be broadcasting that part of it.
Impossible. We're not CBS.
What's going to happen is...
we're not the Golf Channel.
They're going to play 5 holes, 10 through 14, and then 5, 6, 7, 8, and then number 2. Which the way
we'll
that
hop over to 2, okay.
Yeah, which the way that the golf course is laid out, it works out just fine. Okay. You get to number 2. Number 2 green is right adjacent to number 14 green, where the other 10 guys are going to end up, and we'll have 6 guys with 4 holes to play. That is when we're going to start live broadcasting the horse race.
Right.
Where is that going to be streamed?
Oh. I'm trying to think. I think last year we went to the KECO's Facebook page because it is the KECO Open.
So that we're gonna go there. KECO Facebook page, be the first place to check. Because I had this question last night. Where can I watch the horse race? And I thought to myself, man, we thought about a lot of things, but really hadn't nailed that down.
You know, last night I worked a little on the graphic side and everything. And that question popped up, and I didn't text anybody, but I just assumed KECO Open, KECO's Facebook page.
So let's just make that decision right here on the air.
I think without we should just make consulting. That executive decision.
We're not even consult anybody.
Let's just grab the bull by the horns and go with it.
So
KECO's Facebook page. It just makes more sense, right?
Somewhere after 4 o'clock, it's hard to tell when that's going to pick up.
Yeah.
It'll take at least an hour to get that far, probably an hour and a half. So I'd say if you're not going to be able to make it out, and by the way, come on out. 4 o'clock.
Oh, it's really cool.
Elk City Golf and Country Club. You'll be one of, I don't know, 100 golf carts, 50 golf carts. There'll be a ton
it's
of
really,
people.
It was really cool last year, around 18.
I can't wait to see how the patrons decide to split up, meaning.
Who are they going to follow?
Who are they going to follow the first 10?
And I know who I'd follow. What group I'd follow.
How do you know? The groups aren't made yet.
Well, I would wait and find out
So you've got a certain guy in mind?
That's a certain guy's going to be in the studio here in about 10 minutes.
He's not going to be in the studio. We're going to have to call him.
Well, I thought I was ready to shake his hand and be in the presence of greatness.
I'll do that later on this afternoon.
Okay, well, I'd follow Mr. Gibson.
Okay.
That's who I'd follow.
It's going to be a fun – it's a fun idea, and I think it's going to really, really work. To have more guys be involved and then meet at the end. And honestly, helps us.
Why does that help?
We only have to do 4 holes instead of 9.
Right.
As far as the live broadcast goes.
But we're trying to add to it. So I'm a little nervous about this, by the way.
Ah, I mean, we've tested it. We know everything
works. I'm always
works.
Nervous about this stuff.
It's fine.
Because if something doesn't work, everybody looks at me.
It's fine.
How come it didn't work?
We've already ran through the tests. We've been out there mapping out the course. We'll be fine. Oh, wait.
I was like, did you go without me? I don't remember.
We'll just fly by the
seat of our pants. In theory, it works great, but applying it, we'll see.
So sometime, like 5:30, at least probably, is when everybody would meet on the 15th tee. Six guys, four holes, drop two, and then one, one, one. And that's when we'll start live streaming that finals of the horse race tonight. Right. It's going to be a blast. Strong field.
Very. I was looking through the names. A lot of familiar names. And I say familiar names because I hear you guys talk, well, that guy hit that the other day. Did you hear about what he did? And, you know, I just, when you guys are chatting golf and I'm just sitting there, oh, that must be nice to be good at golf. These guys are good at golf. These guys are real good.
There's a bunch of guys that are going to be really good at golf.
It's going to be fun. And then Saturday, we've got some.
So tell everybody what's going to happen Saturday.
We're going to host a golf tournament.
I mean, streaming wise.
We're just we'll have our scoreboard going. So those listening, if you're in the championship flight, you can follow that scoreboard again on KUCO's Facebook page. We'll have a live scoreboard as scores are being reported to me. And it'll show what place you're in and how far back you are.
I'll tell you what.
20 teams, right?
And, 21.
Oh, wow. Wanted to double check my scoreboard.
Missing one.
We'll check. I mean, we got time.
It was pretty cool last year. We did it 2 years ago with varying degrees of success. Then last year, we mapped out a plan on the golf course with the right amount of help to do this.
Right.
And it went off without a hitch. And as I was sitting on 15 green, and as the afternoon wore on, as different groups came through, as they got closer to the end, it was fascinating to me to watch those guys finish 15, run to the cart, pick up their phone
to see
and refresh it, because they were following the scoreboard on their Facebook page.
Yeah.
And refresh it to see exactly where we were 13 through 13. We just, or I guess 13 through 12. We just went par or birdie par eagle. Now we're 15 through 15 or whatever it was. Where does that work? Where are we?
You know what it's going to turn into? Teams are going to start bringing their own iPads and mounting them in there. And
I mean, that was kind of what was happening.
And then they're just going to get in there and look and go, okay, here we are. And yeah.
Which to me, I think it's so awesome.
It's something no one else does.
It is.
And we can do it, and we're doing it. And I think it adds a level of competitiveness. Because like you said, okay, guys, we're only one back. We got three more holes. We can do this.
Yeah, and looking to see, okay, how do they finish? I mean, right. we can't do it every hole. We don't have enough people.
No, it's not.
But every three, it's a little bit golf statty. If you played college golf, you know what that means. Every three holes, you report your score to somebody, and we're flashing that up live as it can get.
Yeah.
Real-time scoring. And I did start to notice. And it was pretty funny. Like, guys in the middle of the pack that weren't sure if they had a chance – but weren't playing terrible, they really didn't have it on. But guys that knew they're toward the top, or guys that knew, this ain't our year, those were the two sets of groups that were really following it.
Yeah.
When they left the 15th green, like, who's winning or are we winning? Guys in the middle were kind of like, head down, keep grinding. We got a few left. We can make up the shots, da-da-da. So that was pretty awesome for me just to kind of watch.
So
how they all dealt with it.
The reaction to this is positive.
Oh, I think
because I've always worried about golfers not wanting to reveal where they're at because they don't want other people to know how good they're doing or not doing. But the reaction is well, you haven't heard anybody say, "Oh man, I don't like that. I don't want to give you my score."
No,
everything's been positive with it
so far.
Then we'll keep doing it.
So far, it has been.
Good.
Yeah, it just brings a different element to a tournament like this that I don't think you get. Like you said, a lot of places you can't get this, where you can know clear across the golf course from each other.
Yeah.
Where you stand.
Yeah.
So that'd be fun, and if any of you guys are listening to Championship Flight, we're going to be asking you. We're gonna have folks out there. We're gonna be asking you.
Scorekeepers, and
that way we can keep it updated as real time as possible for the weekend.
Or you can text it into Aaron. Go ahead and give your number.
Not happening.
No, I just put it on the Facebook page.
I get enough of the crazies anyway. Is that what we're gonna do? Facebook KCO Facebook page for that also.
It's KCO open. Yep.
The live leaderboard.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to do it.
Do you have a favorite for tonight's horse race?
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that.
Why?
I don't need 19 other guys getting upset with me.
You're not going to fire a pick out there?
Or if I pick somebody and I jinx them. I'm not going to do that.
Don't be the black cloud.
I'm not doing that. How about you?
It's impossible to tell. Yeah. Honestly, it's such a fickle event.
Just whoever...
I mean, because, listen, last year's winner, our man Travis Stout, off of number 12 from the tee box, he hit it so far left that he found the native area that really shouldn't have even been in play. And as soon as he hit that tee shot, you're thinking, well, Travis Stout on this hole.
Yeah.
And he found a way to kind of scratch and claw through that one. And from there, he played great golf and won. But it's almost like the winner always kind of needs that little bit of break.
Right.
Just that little deal that keeps them alive, or, you know, a chip off here and there that maybe didn't hit the greatest chip, but somebody else didn't either, and just kind of squeak by early on, and then all of a sudden kind of settle in, start playing good golf, and boom. Get down to the end, and now you got a winner.
I'm looking at the names right now.
We'll fire them out there.
No, I mean, I'm just trying to pick a winner.
Oh, it's
impossible. Who are the new ones in here?
Oh, gosh. I'm not looking at the list. There's a bunch of different guys.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun, and by the time we get down to six, then it's going to be easy to recover, and you guys can watch the finals. The final four holes, KECO Facebook page, somewhere around 5:30, maybe even a little bit after that, to be honest. But start checking it then. We'll go live, and then we'll cover the final four holes of the KECO Moran Equipment Open horse race tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of really good golf will be played on this golf course, and I will tell you, after being out there yesterday and the day before, it's going to be played on a really spectacularly manicured golf course.
I don't doubt that.
This place is in as good of shape as it's maybe ever been. Thank you to the good Lord for the rain. Thank you to Ed Hughes for doing the work that he and his crew do. It's going to be sweet.
Any insight? Because can you give any tips to maybe some of these guys who are maybe listening to the show, and then they can maybe give us credit if they win? Because, well, I was listening to the Skinny on Sports, and he said to do this on hole number whatever.
I will say this. If it doesn't rain, which it's not supposed to.
No.
It's going to be hot. Being in the fairway will be better than being in the rough.
Thanks, Captain Obvious.
I mean, if you, what I mean
isn't
by
that the idea of golf?
What I mean by that is, maybe a shot 20 yards shorter in the fairway is better than another one 20 yards up in the rough.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Of course, I say that every year, and then you watch them bomb it down there. They hack it out of the rough right on the green. You go, man, how do they spin it like that out of the rough? I don't do that. Guess what? That's why I'm working, not playing. Joining us now is a guy that's going to be playing in the KECO Moran Equipment Open this weekend. He is a four-time NAIA All-American at Oklahoma Christian. He's won four professional golf tournaments, Korn Ferry Tour winner in 2019 at the BMW Charity Pro-Am, and also the owner of the lowest round in the history of golf. It's Mr. Rian Gibson. Rian, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Seems like you've done your homework.
A little bit. You know, it's funny because hearing about the round that you shot at River Oaks that day, I happen to be a really good buddy of one of the guys that was in the group with you, Eric Fox. And yep. for you to be able to shoot a 55 with him chirping in your ear, I have no idea how you did it.
That's fine. After about 10 or 11 holes, they both him and Ryan, the other partner in the group, seemed to go quiet. They didn't want to jinx me, I think.
How much different was that? Because, listen, as normal golfers like Jared and I are, as you get going that low, how do you notice that all of a sudden, wait a minute, they're not talking, how good am I playing? I mean, do you know where you're at the entire time? Or are you just kind of playing, knowing you're playing good, and you just figure out a way to keep it going?
So definitely, you know, playing good, you know, trying to make as many birdies as I can. But reality kind of struck when I made the turn at 10 under. And I was like, did that really just happen? And, you know, I went to the front and had a couple of benign pars to start the second nine, and then got on a little streak again. And that's when I kind of thought to myself, well, I'm already in the 50s. If I can get it to the house now, let's see how many more I can get. And I was fortunate enough to birdie the last three, and insanely added up to 16 under.
Talking to Rian Gibson, 59 is such a number in golf, like the holy grail type of thing. And like you said, I mean, you're like three holes away thinking, hell, I'm already gonna shoot 59. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what was that feeling thinking to yourself, man, I'm already going to be in the 50s. Like, how do I – did you have any idea what the lowest score ever was? Or you just thought, I'm going to shoot the best score I can, and I know it's going to be in the 50s?
Basically, best score I can. I hadn't shot in the 50s before. So kind of once I crossed that threshold, I was like, well, I could kind of, you know, try to par out and, you know, see if I can limp to the house and keep it in the 50s, or keep going and give my best opportunities I could to – you know, make some birdies coming in to see how low I could go. That was kind of my mentality, you know, in the last five, six holes. And then, yeah, add them up at the end and see what it was. And no, we had no idea what the lowest score was. It's something I've never even looked up before or even fathomed. It was just something that was an afterthought when we were all sitting around, you know, talking about the round and adding up the bets at the end of the day.
So, like, the bets at the end of the day, I can't even imagine how much money those boys had to kind of fork over to you that day.
Yeah, it's kind of, I let them, I think everyone just kind of bought a few drinks and celebrated, so I didn't actually make them pay up, but that would have been a nice little mortgage payment, for sure, probably.
I got to ask, do people give you a hard time? I mean, you go out and shoot another great round, and it's not a 55. Do people give you a hard time and say, well, it's not a 55. What's wrong with you today?
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess there are some expectations, and I kind of, people do know that I can shoot some pretty low scores, but it'd be nice to get back around that number one day, that's for sure.
So there's a bunch of guys that play golf that are listening, and for a bunch of us, you know, you start out two or three under par through four or five holes, and then all of a sudden it's like you kind of tense up. Like there's a thing in golf, and you know this probably better than most, and they're able to overcome it, like scared of going low. How, in your mind, as you're going, you start out fine, and then, like you said, I mean, 10 under through 9 is a different deal, but let's say you're 4 or 5 under through 9. How, in your mind, do you continue to have that mindset of, okay, I'm going to turn 5 into 6 into 7 into 8, next thing you know, I've got a 62 on the card?
Well, I think we're probably all guilty of thinking about the big picture, right? Like, the end score at the end of the day. Like you said, get up to a good start, and you're like, oh, wow, this could be my best round of the day. Well, I think the fact you've already thinking about that is kind of, you're already hampering your result there. You know, I've been guilty of it. I've been in positions where I've messed up some good rounds as well. So, you know, in talking with some of the mental gurus on the side of golf, like the way I approach golf now when I'm kind of playing that way is, you know, only think about the next shot in front of you. I know it sounds pretty simple, but all you can control is what's in front of you. And I try to play 18 of the best holes that I can. The, you know, 18 and adding them up at the end. I'm just trying to make the best score I can on each hole. And then whatever that adds up to the end of the day, that's what it is. Instead of thinking big picture, hey, I'm 4 under through 5. You know, let's get in the house for the best round I can. I'm actually thinking, well, what can I do here to give myself an opportunity for another birdie and see what they add up to.
So, I mean, obviously, everybody listening, your accent, Australian. Did you grow up in Australia? And if so, I mean, what brought you to Oklahoma?
Yeah, so kind of long story short on my background, Oklahoma Christian offered me a golf scholarship, kind of sight unseen, to come over from Australia. So I came over in 2004, no college visit, and that's how I got into Edmond, Oklahoma, and met my now wife at Oklahoma Christian, and still live in Edmond, and yeah, playing golf out of here.
So were you always a golfer growing up, or did you kind of play other sports, or was it kind of your thing from the very start?
Yeah, so I kind of grew up playing a lot of different sports, like kind of seasonal sports. So I played a lot of cricket in the summer, soccer in the winter, a bunch of tennis, a bunch of racket sports, and golf. And it was about 14 or 15 is when I kind of went the golf route. We lived by a course. It was something I could do, you know, on my own time. Didn't necessarily need a practice partner or a hitting partner or a team to practice with per se. So that's what it kind of intrigued me about golf, and you know what I put in is kind of what I get out of it. So you know, when I'm at home on the couch and on the range, I kind of feel bad. So that's kind of the route I took, and like I said, was fortunate enough to get a golf scholarship to make it over here to America, and lucky enough to be still playing to this day.
I heard all the sports. You didn't mention basketball. I'm going to go off the beaten path here, Aaron. Last night, are you a Thunder fan, first and foremost?
I am. I saw we drafted a young Australian.
Yeah, what do you think about that, getting Josh Giddey from Australia?
Yeah, so I'm not playing basketball. I don't really keep up with the league in Australia. But, I mean, to go that high in the draft, he's got to be a pretty good player. So be interesting to see how he takes to it. And maybe I'll meet him one day, give him a few golf lessons.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
How much is the cultural change coming from Australia to Edmond, Oklahoma, which that's kind of what he's going to be doing at least. How much does that change, or did it change for you coming from there to here?
Yeah, I thought I could have been a good candidate for coming to America too, to be honest. I'd only experienced America once before when I was like 10 or 11 years old, and that was just to LA on a family vacation. So yeah, definitely Oklahoma. I make this joke a lot that back then we had to pull the atlas out to find Oklahoma. We didn't have iPhones or anything like that. So, but no, it was definitely a shock to the system. I just turned 18, fresh out of high school, you know, packed up my life in a suitcase and took an opportunity that I couldn't really pass up. And I'm happy that I did it. Had a good college program, got a good education, and yeah, it took me a couple of years to kind of adjust and to people to understand what I'm saying, but it's been a great experience and nothing I wouldn't change about it.
Who has the hottest summers, Australia or Oklahoma?
I'm telling you, I think it's pretty hot right now, so I'm going to have to go Oklahoma.
We're hanging out with Rian Gibson, coming to play in the golf tournament this weekend here at the 24th annual KECO Moran Equipment Open. All right, so you're four-time All-American at Oklahoma Christian. You've got four professional wins. 2014, you play in the Open Championship, and it's wild because I knew who you were because of the 55 back in 2012, and I pull up the featured group of the third round of the Open Championship, and it's you and two other guys, Tiger and Jordan Spieth. What was that experience like playing alongside those two guys?
First of all, scary. I've never really been... I mean, I played some big events before, obviously not a major championship. And kind of the backstory to that was, I think I was like the second last group finishing on Friday. And with the tee times over there, we finished at like 9:30 at night. Mm-hmm. So I had the birdie of the 18th hole to make the cut, par 5 at Royal Liverpool, and hit it in the bunker for two. And it wasn't the easiest up and down, and I hit it out to about 10, 12 feet. And I was putting really well that week. So I made the putt, which was cool. We were all excited. And it really took a long time to get our tee times out. The RNA were trying to figure out, you know, if they were going to do, you know, traditionally they've always done twosomes off the first tee because those the courses over there, the 10th hole doesn't start by the clubhouse. But for the first time in history of the British Open or the Open Championship, they decided to do threesomes off two tees. So at that point, I knew I was going to be first out with Jordan Spieth. I was like, oh, that's going to be cool. Hopefully get out, shoot a couple under, weather rolls in. You know, you never know. You might be able to move up the leaderboard quite a bit. Well, now we find out I'm getting threesomes off two tees, so now I go last off of 10, and I've got Tiger Woods. And I got that text about 11:30 at night, and I don't think I've slept a wink the whole night. just a surreal kind of thought that I'd be playing with him, and but they were both fantastic. You know, I was pretty nervous to start, but they made it pretty easy, pretty comfortable. You know, inside the ropes, we're all out there trying to do the same thing. It's just more, you know, what I experienced, you know, away from golf was crazy. The amount of people there, the amount of yelling, it was just something I'd never played in front of before. But yeah, what a cool experience that I'll never take for granted.
I mean, you played all kinds of tour events on the PGA Tour, the Korn Ferry Tour, all kinds of tours. But what made it different being alongside Tiger for you inside the ropes? We always hear, oh, there's so much movement, there's so much, you know, noise. What was it like for you, and how much different was it in that group versus all the other groups you played in?
You know, probably... You know, I'd never been really in that position before, first major championship. I was happy to make the cut. I really didn't have, you know, super high expectations. I wasn't playing that great at the time, so I was just kind of happy to make the cut. But, yeah, playing with a guy that I kind of idolized growing up, you know, I knew everything about him. So it was kind of one of those deals that, what can I even ask this guy? Because I probably already know the answer. Yeah, so that was kind of weird to think about. And then, yeah, like you said, just what he brings to the game and the amount of people out there cheering him on, and like you said, the movement in the crowds, he just brings an aura to golf that, you know, no one else does. And it was cool to kind of experience that for, you know, for around the golf. And like I said, he was fantastic to me. You know, I always speak super highly of him, the way he treated me, and just what a cool experience that hopefully one day not only I, but other people will have, you know, if he can finally make a comeback.
So you went in 2019 on the Korn Ferry Tour at the BMW Charity Pro-Am. 2020 on the PGA Tour, the COVID year. Were you disappointed at all with the way that went? Or it's just kind of one of those things that happens?
I guess you could probably say a little bit of both. It was a tough start to the year. I didn't necessarily play that great. And then COVID hit. You know, now I'm sitting at home thinking, you know, what's going to happen to tour status and, you know, playing opportunities moving forward. And then we restarted. So when we restarted, everyone wanted to play again. So it just kind of forced guys that on my level of the tour, you know, to sit at home even longer. So it's always, we already had a 3 or 4 month break, and then I didn't get to play for another 6 weeks. So that made it tough. You know, I wanted to get out there. I was kind of itching to play. And then luckily they kind of extended everyone's status again for the 2021 season. So that's been great. But yeah, it's just two very, very disconjointed years that hopefully next year it'll kind of get back to some normality if we can kind of get this COVID or this new Delta variant, whatever it is, you know, under control, and the tour can get back to normal.
What's the difference that you notice playing on the Korn Ferry Tour versus playing on the PGA Tour? What in your mind separates those guys on each tour and kind of puts them where they're at?
Probably comfort levels. You know, a lot of the, and you can see it on Korn Ferry as well. Guys that spend a few years out there get comfortable. They go back to the same courses every year, you know, like they're doing the PGA Tour. And, you know, guys just, they know they play good at a handful of events every year and they keep their card. You know, it's just, they know their strengths, they control their weaknesses, which they very rarely have some. You know, they're just all round just a better, stronger player. You know, Korn Ferry guys come out, they're young, you know, they might be a little bit too aggressive to start out, you know, whereas the guys on the PGA Tour, they know their expectations and they know what they can do, and you know, that's why some play really good at shorter courses, say shorter hitters, and then bombers take advantage of the longer courses. So probably comfort levels and just knowing the courses is huge out there, I believe.
Are you in Elk City right now?
I am not. I am actually at my home at Oak Tree.
Have you ever been this way, ever played out here before?
I've never been that way. I've been out with Eric Fox, the buddy of mine who spoke about, who I played with 55. I've played Royal Clinton before with him. I think that's probably as far west as my game's been in Oklahoma.
Well, we're a little biased of our course out here. I'm anxious to pick your brain maybe after tonight's horse race, see what you think about the course.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to it.
You mentioned Royal Clinton, which is funny to me. Did you win Labor Day at one point?
I think I did. I know it's been a number of years since I've been out that way. I think I played pretty well out there. But, yeah, like I said, that's a question you probably have to ask Eric.
All right, tell us about Folds of Honor. I mean, Blake's been driving the cool golf cart around for the last few days. I know John.
He might not give it up.
One of the guys on your team. He's got. So tell us about Folds of Honor and what's going on with that golf cart that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, that cart's one of the coolest carts I've seen. Chip and the guys down at Justice Golf Carts in Moore have built a fantastic cart. So I think this is the second year we're going to do a giveaway to raise some money for the Folds of Honor. $100 a ticket can get you, and we're only selling 300 tickets, get you a $20,000 golf cart with a trailer. It's pretty sweet, like you said. Basically, I got on board with Folds of Honor last year just to kind of help the local guys and local chapters raise some money for a good cause, and big believer in what the Folds of Honor stands for, and you know, raising money for scholarships for fallen vets kids. And trying to raise as much money as we can. Hopefully we can sell those tickets pretty quickly, and what a great cause. And
you and John will be tooling around in that tomorrow, right? Or even tonight, I
guess. We brought it out. Hopefully sell some tickets over the weekend. And I know I've already sold a bunch. So I think, you know, come the weekend and they might all get sold once people see them.
So. Rian, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your time. We'll see you here in just a few hours out here in Elk City Golf and Country Club. We really do appreciate your time and really appreciate you honoring the Folds of Honor, because out here, especially where we work, that's a big, giant thing in our minds with celebrating the veterans and what America stands for.
No, absolutely. And looking forward to seeing you guys, and I'm about to head west here pretty soon.
All right, sounds great.
I'll see you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
You bet. That is Rian Gibson, the owner of the greatest round in the history of golf.
Felt like we could have gone another 40 minutes with him. He's a good interview.
Absolutely.
Clearly, he's been in front of the media before.
Well, that's what happens when you play PGA Tour events or you're the Open Championship. And I did not look this up, and I'm mad at myself for doing it. But I think, if I remember right off the top of my head, that 2014 round, third round, Open Championship, Royal Liverpool, I think he beat Tiger. Head to head in the same group. I think he did.
All right. Good luck tonight, horse racers.
But I did not. I can't remember. I just remember watching that featured group because they kind of made the cut on the numbered guys.
Yeah.
And, of course, Tiger, Spieth. And then the guy that shot the best score of all time. Tiger and Spieth were in his group.
You know, he was scared. I bet you they were scared, too.
That's right. Oh, excuse me. Uh-oh.
You all right?
I'm not sure yet.
Is it coming up?
98.1
breakfast
FM.
Breakfast burrito? You're right.
I didn't have breakfast.
Oh, well.
I was too nervous. 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Rian
so
Gibson.
I'm not laughing at you, because I'm laughing because I can relate.
Rian Gibson joining us. Yeah. That was, listen, I didn't want to say this to him to kind of put him on the spot or whatever. But tomorrow, there's going to be 21 four-man teams playing a scramble, which if you don't know what scramble is, everybody hits every shot, you take the best one until you get the ball in the hole.
Right.
There are going to be some really good four-person teams that don't shoot 16 under like he did on his own.
I know. Yeah.
So I wonder if – I mean, he wouldn't do this, but if I was him – this is probably, first off, why I never shot 16 under, and second, why I probably shouldn't be allowed to shoot 16 under. Because if it was me, I would be sitting out in the parking lot – asking those guys what they shot, and if one of them said 15, I'd go, I did better than that by myself. Would you have a shirt that said Mr. 55 on it?
No.
Would your golf ball say that? Like, you know, every what, like March or so?
That's something like Shooter McGavin would do. Guys don't do that.
I got news for you. If I shot 55 every March, when you order the Titleist golf balls, it's like three dozen or four dozen. You pay for three of them, like an extra dozen for free. The number on my golf ball would be 55.
Your license,
guaranteed.
Your license plate on your car would be Mr. 55.
You know, there was a guy, and I'm not going to say his name. Those that know who I'm talking about. Years ago, a golf pro in Western Oklahoma that's no longer in Western Oklahoma, more toward the central part of the state, he would put Mr. Par 5 on his golf ball.
Okay, why?
I mean, I guess it means he hits it long. I'm Mr. Par 5.
Okay. Good for him.
I mean, that's getting pretty strong out there, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't.
If I was good at anything, I'd be completely unlikable and unbearable.
That's what I'm saying. I would be the same way.
I want to pretend like I'd be Mr. Humble and everybody. Yeah. I wouldn't.
You know, he's not, Mr. Gibson here is not going to go around wearing a polo and on the left side it has 55 embroidered in it. You know, he's going to go there and people are going to go, who's the guy who shot the 55? Who's that guy? Oh, there
you
he
know
is.
Me.
Now let his play do the bragging for him.
Obviously, see? It can. Obviously, it can. All right, let's talk about the draft just a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice segue you had with him. A young guy coming from Australia to Oklahoma Christian playing golf.
As soon as they announced the kid, Josh Giddey, I thought, we got to find a way to ask Ren Gibson about this. We got
so. 6'8", point guard / playmaker, good athlete. It's funny because I saw his name kind of at the back end of the top 10 to 12 or so, but he was also one of those guys that when you read up on the mock drafts and whatnot, the one tag at the end of his write-up was always, he's this, he's this, he's this, he's that, and we're going to put him at 11. But don't be surprised if somebody gets enamored with him and he ends up in the middle of the top 10. And so when that pick happened last night, you know, all it was James Bouknight at the end of the mock draft time. Every single one you read had that. Now, I mentioned yesterday, when you see that from everybody when it comes to the Thunder, no chance.
Right.
It's not going to be that.
I'm a little embarrassed that after all these years...
You fell for it.
I fell for it.
I mean, come on, Charlie Brown. Lucy's moving the football.
I fell for it.
And sure enough, when it happened, my first thought was, is this a trade?
Yeah.
Because as we talked about yesterday, it's not like the NFL draft. You don't just trade picks. This guy... picks for this guy, and then it moves along, and then next thing you know, the 10th pick is somebody else, and then you find out, oh, they traded. So that was my very first thought, is this must be a trade. Then I kind of started checking the social media and figured out pretty quickly, no, it's not. I guess that the Thunder brass flew out to L.A. unbeknownst to basically anybody last weekend, worked him out, and decided, okay, we like this guy. Now, Thunder fans, everybody watching the draft, everybody I know that was watching the draft was up in arms with the pick. And this draft is so much different than the NFL because a lot of times when the NFL draft happens, you see somebody and it's normally the Raiders and you go, what are they doing?
Right.
And you turn out to be right almost every time. The problem with the NBA draft is these guys are so young and have played so little on the stage that they're going to be on, and there's so much growth potential. It's hard to just flat out rule this pick a disaster right now, but this screams to me of Presti trying to be the smartest man in the room, and we're going to find out if he is or not.
We're not going to find out day one.
Oh, no. But in 3 years, we'll find out.
In 3 years, we're going to find out. Because everyone, like I said yesterday, when they went and drafted Steven Adams, and everyone's kind of like, you went after this guy. He turned out to be a pretty good draft. Now, and I go back, my initial reaction was like you, up in arms. And you asked my kids, my mood was a little sour last night when that pick was made. Like, this is what we did. We tanked for this. We had unlucky draft or lottery position, and this is what we do? Did we get this guy? Who is this guy? Never heard of this guy. He's been on nobody's radar. And, by the way, ESPN Plus, I want my money back. And, but I go back to thinking what I've always said, in Sam Presti, we trust. He's hit more than miss with his draft picks. So when you have a draft pick this high, and if he's that confident in getting this guy at six, I'm going to trust Sam Presti's pick here and roll with it.
He better be right.
He better be right. Him, yeah. He better be.
Or
right.
maybe the tank is in more than we think.
Well, then that's why I got a little sour last night, because I thought we might not be done tanking.
Well, my thing is, if you really weren't done tanking, then make those trades with SGA, because he's too damn good
right.
to tank.
Right.
All right. Let's move on. Thunder draft. Nobody knows. I mean, the problem is nobody knows. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like we can't sit here and give it a – and I did it last night, and it was really hyperbole, and it was reactive.
Jared gave a D-minus.
I gave a D-minus my initial gut reaction. And then I slept on it and brushed my teeth this morning thinking about it. I thought, yeah, that was a little overreactive.
I was actually more disappointed in the second pick that was made than the first one.
In trading it? Or the second pick
The second pick that was made. One pick after was Kai Jones from Texas. I wanted Kai Jones. I wanted Kai Jones, and I wanted Davion Mitchell.
Yeah.
We got neither. Josh Giddey. He's got a cool haircut. A little Adam Morrison to it. Or a Dan Dickow.
I mean, he looks like a very young Steven Adams. I mean, baby-faced. And I mean, I'm not saying he's going to play obviously, he's not playing that position. But, you know, from down under.
The one thing that immediately came out from the Thunder brass, clearly because Royce Young tweeted it, they love the fit with Josh Giddey and SGA.
Well,
and we'll see if it's
true
or not.
We'll
All right, let's move on. Enough of this.
Okay.
Let's bury the Big 12. Not really bury the Big 12, but let's talk about the Big 12. 1996, the Big 8 joins with four members of the defunct Southwest Conference, which was Texas Tech, Texas, Baylor, and Texas A&M, to form the Big 12. It's amazing to look at the Big 12 as originally constructed versus what it became after realignment. Because I know, kids, that you're going to think I'm old, but we lived in a world,
okay, boomer,
not that long ago, where the Big 12 was the best football conference in the country.
It really was, yeah.
Not that long ago. Like, barely a decade where that was the truth. I think it was four national titles from Big 12 schools when it was created. Numerous, you know, title appearances in the BCS championship game to the college football playoff. But there was clearly two different eras of the Big 12. It was the original conference and what was left over?
The 12-team and the 10-team.
And really just the 8-team. Because I get it, we had 10. But we added two that didn't belong. With TCU and West Virginia.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was really the 12 and then the 8.
Gotcha.
Let me ask you this. From 1996 on, what do you think was the best game played in the Big 12? I'm not talking bowl, just like, right. like I'm talking about
Big 12 team
conference
Big 12
game.
Team, yes.
What was the best conference game played in the Big 12
era? I don't, you know, there's the best game, there's which I compute to being the most entertaining, the wildest, craziest, funnest, fun's a key word, not important game, because there's been games that are important that shifted the league.
Right.
Nebraska, Texas Big 12 title game comes to mind. The best game, I go to OU at Texas Tech 2016.
Okay.
The roller coaster of a ride that game was. between two future NFL quarterbacks, Heisman winner. I mean, this just the roller coaster of that game as being the best. It defined the Big 12 of this high-octane offense at the time. Conference.
See,
that game, OU at Texas Tech, 2016 at night, crazy game, back and forth. It was took like 8 hours to play.
See, I think this question also goes in eras. Because there was that era. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just got OU West Virginia 2012.
There
the Tavon
go.
Austin
yeah,
game.
Yeah.
You also had 2014, 61-58, Baylor coming back to beat TCU.
Yeah, yeah.
Which cost both of them not to get in the dadgum playoff.
Right. But that was like an important game.
It was a hugely important game. But it was the second part of the conference.
Right.
I go back to the very early stages of the conference for this answer. Columbia, Missouri, 1997, Nebraska, Missouri, Matt Davidson kicks the ball up in the air in the end zone and the diving catch.
Yeah.
You know, that was entertaining, important, fun. That's where I go.
Right.
What was the best team in the history of the Big 12 Conference?
Oh, boy.
People are going to hate my answer, I can already tell
you. You're going to go Texas 05.
Yep.
Yeah. They won a title. And one could argue OU 2000 because they won a title. But
Nebraska 97.
Nebraska 97. They were a monster. I was leaning Texas 05.
We got 95. Nebraska 95 wasn't the conference, though.
No, it was big.
It has to be after 96.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you know, take allegiances out of it. Texas 2005 was a good team. And
oh, it was. You know, one that's going to be underrated because of what happened in the Big 12 title game. 1997 Kansas State.
Yeah.
Michael Bishop and those boys.
Yeah.
Who was the best player in the history of the Big 12 conference?
We only have like 3 minutes. This one can take a while.
Oh, listen, we can go. Nobody wants to hear Pat be an old man anyhow.
I've listed five, and to narrow it down is hard. I mean, do you equate best player with hardware in Heisman winners? Does that trump the rest of them? There are some say, man, that was a great player, didn't win a Heisman. I think of like Ndamukong Suh, Vince Young,
yeah.
Pat Mahomes, Ricky Williams won it. Adrian Peterson was a force as soon as he stepped foot on campus, as soon as he got his first touch carrying the football. Baker Mayfield and his story and his path through the conference, playing for two conference teams, if you think about it, and still winning a Heisman at OU. To narrow that down is incredibly hard for me. I want to lean Ndamukong Suh because without him, that team is absolutely nothing. I mean, nobody's talking about Nebraska.
Yeah.
He was the last great player for that team. I kind of lean that way.
I think it's Baker Mayfield.
Okay. I don't want to sound like a homer, but
well, I mean,
his story is fantastic.
Stats tell you, he was in New York three different times.
Yeah.
In the top five of the Heisman. The only thing he didn't do was win a title.
Right.
And if he won a title, there would be a slam dunk case.
Sure.
You're going to hear people say Vince Young. Vince Young had the best season.
Right, look at his seasons before.
But for the career, I mean.
The career-wise, yeah, I agree.
Which team, as an OU fan or as a Big 12 fan, which team are you going to miss the most not playing going to the SEC?
Can I give two answers for two different reasons?
Yeah.
For football, it's Bedlam, OSU. That's up in the air if that's going to continue. But that going to miss that. Come football season. Basketball?
Kansas.
Yeah,
boo. Yeah. See, my answer is one that hasn't been happening anyhow. What I'll miss the most about the Big 12 and what I have been missing the most about the Big 12 is you don't get to see Oklahoma play Nebraska. And it was the worst part about the Big 12 to start with. Now, back then, probably wasn't too horrible for OU fans because you weren't getting your tail kicked every year by those dominant Nebraska teams like you were at the end of the Big 8 era. But that was the one thing about the Big 12 joining up that I didn't like.
Was the
divisions. It took Nebraska, Oklahoma off of the yearly schedule.
Right. that Thanksgiving matchup.
That's right. It was gone. And that kind of sucked. And then now it got even worse in 2010 when they left and weren't a part of the conference anyhow.
Yeah.
I hate that one. I think if we were doing this show in Texas, it would be the easiest answer of all time. But guess what? It's coming back.
Right.
With Texas and Texas A&M.
Yeah.
But I just, that game, the OU Nebraska, especially as young as, or the, our age, what probably me more than you even, to be honest with you, remembering those classic, mostly OU wins in the mid-80s were just, it was like childhood. I mean, that's what you had.
Yeah.
And that's been a void.
Yeah. One more question before we go. What won't you miss about the Big 12?
Bedlam.
You won't miss it?
No.
I think the obvious answer is 11 a.m. kickoffs.
I think we might still have some of those.
No.
Not very many, but there will be one or two.
Yeah.
I won't miss Bedlam.
You won't miss Bedlam?
No.
Man. The dinner table at your house.
No. That's why. It's the worst day of my year.
Okay,
because I can't say a word the entire day. Everybody have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.